It doesn't look like it, but we'll try it again. Okay. Shabbat Shalom. Third time's a charm. That's what they say. So we are getting into now chapter 11. Maybe Yahweh did not want our Q&A on the tape today, so we will skip that. But we are going into finishing chapter 11, and I think, like I said, I didn't think about this before the school, but if you were to put a title to our program, you know, the title to me would be Finding Real Faith in Your Life. So ending up here with Hebrews chapter 11, I think is really apropos for what we're doing here and really understanding faith and growing in faith. And I don't know about you, but I know in the 2 weeks I've been here, my faith has grown. Really has. And I've had great study time. My focus seems to be better. And I really, really appreciate this time that Yahweh has given us. So I pray the same to you. And another thing you have to realize is, I was saying environment is 90% of your battle, but not just with yourself, because the environment, if you're one person like Abraham and you're out in the wilderness and you find Yahweh, that's all well and good. But here, you have 40 spirits of Yahweh, you know, and that's powerful. And that feeds off each other. That's the greatest part of community living. It's the spirit of Yahweh feeding it out. The spirit of Yahweh testifies against itself that we are the children of Yahweh. And that helps because each of us are limited in our spiritual gifts. There's nobody except Yeshua that had every spiritual gift to the full. So now when I come here, where I'm lacking, and not just in a gift, but where I'm lacking in my spiritual thinking, I'm getting it from the environment of everybody else. That spirit is flowing here, and it really is powerful if you take advantage of it. So think about this while you're studying and you're praying. I hope you're... study and prayer has been more uplifted while you're here, and continue. Ask Yahweh for it. Pray for it because it is great. So we stopped the last time with Rahab, the innkeeper, and a great story. I love it, you know, and it's kind of that story, like as you're reading the story, it just kind of pops out of nowhere where Rahab comes. But I really appreciate her and her fervent. Maybe we should put her also as one of those, you know, in our ladies' class when we were going over the ladies of Yahweh, because she is there. Even in the, it says she's even in the genealogy because of that. So, what a lot of faith that took, because she risked her life the same way that Queen Esther did. And then verse 32. What more shall we say? Wow, we're going over this for, you know, almost a month now. We're going over all these different people and stories of faith, and it's kind of like he's saying, what more can I say? For time will fail me telling about Gideon, Barak, and also Samson, Jethro, and David, and Samuel, and the rest of the prophets. And he's right. He's right. If we keep going, we're going to wind up doing this for maybe another month. So we're not going to go through all these stories, but I will mention a few of them. I'll mention Gideon here, because I really like that story with Gideon. Judges 7. Judges 7. Gideon is a very interesting character. Judges 7. And I will read 1 through 7, then go down to verse 15. And Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, rose early, and all the people with him. And they camped by the spring of Harod. And the army of Midian was north of him on Mount Moreh in the valley. How many people have been with me there to this place? Anybody else? No? Greg, you've never been there to Gideon Spring?
Is that in the Jezreel?
Close.
Remember.
The backside. You'd remember if you were there. Sister Kay, you were there. It's a great place. I love it. It's one of my favorite places.
And Sister Fi.
Yes, with Sister Fi. Because the spring that this happened, that was there, where they lapped the water, and it's an amazing story. And like I said, if you were there, you wouldn't forget about it. in the front, it actually is a national park there in Israel. So they have all these swimming pools they made, and all the kids are in the pool and everything. We kind of walk to the back to the spring, and we go right here where the story happened. And there's nothing like reading the story right where it is. And Yahweh said to Gideon, "The people with you are too many for me to give Midian into your hands, that Israel not glorify itself against me, saying, my hand has delivered me." So it's kind of like ironic as you're reading this, because Gideon really is a man of faith. And if you're thinking in those days, I'm telling you, the days of the judges was bad news. Israel was not a very strong nation at that point. We see the Philistines and others coming against them. Their hooray was really with Samson, and Samson was not a leader, you know. Some of those stories there, you want to know if Yahweh has a sense of humor, you know, read some of those things with Samson. But he wasn't really a leader, you know, and they're going through all this stuff. And now Gideon, that is trying to break down these altars, right? And he goes out in the middle of the night because he's fearing it, and he does break down the altar. And he's scared because they want to know, who broke this down? We want to kill him. So now Yahweh's telling Gideon, okay, you're going to go out there and you're going to fight. And first he's putting out a fleece, right? So, and it's nothing wrong. And sometimes we shouldn't always have to put a fleece out. But if it's something that's really, really important, you know, maybe a job you're not sure or something, you could put a fleece out. I know I've done it before. And he puts out the fleece and it comes in. And then he's like, okay, please don't be mad at me. I really want to make sure on this, you know, because it could mean my life. So then he puts out the fleece again, and Yahweh said, yeah, you're going to go. So now he's thinking to himself, you know, I only got one problem. We don't have enough men. You know, this isn't going to work. You know, we don't have enough men here. And then Yahweh's up there, you know, they got one problem, though. They got too many men. So Yahweh's thinking one way, he's thinking another way, and then they come together, and he's like to Yahweh, yeah, we don't have enough men. And Yahweh's like, you have too many men. He's like, huh? It's like a funny story when you think about it, but it's really going to show him, you know, that in the end, sometimes we think we need more resources than we really do, you know? Sometimes we think, and if Yahweh's on your side, what more do you need, right? So that's what he's thinking. Like, if Yahweh's going to be there, really all he needs is himself. And not even that. You know, it's just that Yahweh is using him as an example. But he didn't even need the 300 men. He could have done it just with Gideon. Look at the Red Sea crossing, right? Did Yahweh need anybody there to destroy the most powerful army in the world? No. All he needed was belief. That's all he needed. And that's in our life. You know, as we're going through these things, and now we're getting into our plan of actions, and we're going to be moving ahead here with it. Think about that. Think about Gideon, right? Think about all you need is Yahweh on your side. And if Yahweh be for us, who can be against us? So he says, and now then, cry in the ears of the people, saying, whoever is fearful and trembling, let him return and leave Mount Gilead. And 22,000 of the people returned, and 10,000 were left. Wow. And that's what you want. You don't need in your life people that lack faith. And that's why I say, you know, we're talking about an inner circle. I would never take anybody in my inner circle that didn't have faith. That would be like above the top things that would be needed. Because no human being has faith 24/7. And the times where my faith is wavering, the last thing I want is to come to my inner circle and for them to make that faith even more wavering. You want people there that are going to make you stronger. You want people that are going to raise you up. You want people that are going to get that little bit of doubt gone. So it's important here. So this is what Yahweh shows, right? And to me, it reminds me a little bit like in the end time, where Yahweh is sending out the wedding invitations, right? What happens? Some people don't have the faith, and they're going here, and they're going here. And what does Yahweh say? Not one person like that is going to be invited to my wedding. So he says, go get more. But here, he tells those people, leave. Okay? You don't believe that I can do it? You don't have 100%? Go. I don't need you. And then Yahweh says to Gideon, the people are still too many. So 10,000 go and they're still too many. He says, bring them down to the water, and I will refine them for you there. And it shall be, he of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, he shall go with you. And any of whom I say to you, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go with you. And he brought the people down to the water, and Yahweh said to Gideon, everyone who laps of the water with his tongue as a dog laps, you shall set him apart. And everyone who bows on his knees to drink, set him apart. And the number of those lapping with the hand to their mouth was 300 men, and the rest of the people bowed down on their knees to drink water. And Yahweh said to Gideon, I will deliver you by the 300 men who lapped, and shall give Midian into your hand, and all the people shall go each to his place. Did you ever wonder why he picked the people who, the number of the people that were lapping with their hand to their mouth compared to the other ones that were going down? Because if you think about it, the 300 still had their weapon in their hand. The other ones, all they knew is they wanted the water, right? So Yahweh was looking for the ones who really wanted to fight. And they were the ones where they're lapping with one hand and they're holding the weapon in the other hand. So Yahweh saw through that who really was a warrior and who wasn't. And he sees that sometimes in our life, right? So sometimes in our life when a situation comes up, he's looking, you know. Are you there just lapping like a dog, getting what you need for survival? Or do you always have your spiritual armor on? You always have one hand, you know. Are you going to him in faith? Are you praying about this? Are you putting on the armor? You know, not physical armor, but the spiritual armor. Because those are the ones that Yahweh is going to pick, like he did over here. So let's go down to verse 15 and see what happens. And it happened when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and its interpretation, he worshipped. And he returned to the army of Israel and said, rise up, for Yahweh has given the army of Midian into your hand. And he divided the 300 men into three companies. And he put a ram's horn in the hand of all of them, and empty jars and torches inside the jars. And he said to them, look at me and do this. Even behold, I am coming to the edge of the camp, and it will be as I do, so you shall do. And I will blow with a ram's horn, I and all who are with me. And you shall blow with the ram's horn, you also all around the camp, and shall shout for Yahweh and for Gideon. And Gideon came and the 100 men with him to the edge of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch. And they had newly set the watch, and they blew with the ram's horn and shattered the jars in their hands. And the three companies blew with their ram's horns and broke the jars and held the torches in their left hand, and with their right hand the ram's horns. And they cried out, a sword for Yahweh and for Gideon. And they ran, each one stood in his place all around the army, and all the army ran, and they shouted and they fled. And the 300 blew the ram's horn, and Yahweh set a man's sword against his companion, even in all the army. And the army fled to Beth Shittah at Zeraroth to the border of Abel Mehalah. By the way, Abel Mehalah is all the way up near Lebanon. So they went pretty fast running for their lives because Yahweh was there. So it's a great story. There's a lot we learned from there, you know, of putting trust in Yahweh. But yet also we have to, like I said, put on that armor and how Yahweh does judge us. And he does understand if we have faith or not. And if we don't have faith, it's impossible to please him. That's the one scripture that I'm really learning here in a way I never did before. So praise Yahweh for that. Okay, back to Hebrews 11. So we see these great stories. And Gideon, the glory goes to Yahweh. He needed only the 300 men, right? And he didn't even need that. But that's what we learned from Gideon, that all glory goes to Yahweh. The story of Barak, I'm not going to read that, but we know Barak and Deborah, right? Overcoming fear. That's what that story is about. Samson, strength without discipline leads to pride. And I feel bad for Samson because, wow, he had so much potential, you know, like you can imagine, but he had no self-control. And you see it. You could be and he was the strongest person to ever be on earth. If you think of some of the things he did, like ripping apart this gate of a city that probably weighed 450 pounds and carrying it away, but he had no self-control. So all the strength in the world without self-control will mean nothing. And maybe even hurt you more like it did with him. You know, to the point of getting his eyes gouged out. And Jethro, the seriousness of vows to Yahweh. So here was a man who made a rash vow to Yahweh of he will sacrifice the first thing that comes out of his house if Yahweh gives them victory, and it happened to be his daughter. And he went through with it, showing you the seriousness and how people kept vows. They kept vows. And some people try to say, oh no, it wasn't sacrifice. Oh, it was definitely sacrifice. In that time, you see it in Judges 10, human sacrifice was very normal in those days. So he sacrificed his daughter because of the seriousness of the vow, and that's what Yahweh says. You don't have to make a vow. You know, in the new covenant, Yeshua said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. You don't have to make a vow. But if you make that vow, you better do it, because Yahweh will require it of you. So, I think the better place is just let your yes be yes and your no be no. And then also David and Samuel and the rest of the prophets. Acts 13 and verse 22 and 23. Acts 13. 22 and 23. And removing him, they raised up to them David for a king, removing Saul. To whom he also said, witnessing, I found David, the son of Jesse, to be a man according to my own heart, who will do all my will. Wow. Can you imagine Yahweh saying that about you? From the seed of this man, Elohim raised Yeshua, the Savior, for Israel, as was promised. In verse 36, for David served the will of Elohim in his generation, and slept and was added to his fathers, and saw corruption. So he's trying to show that David is not the Messiah. He's still sleeping in the grave. Some of you have seen his grave in Israel. And getting back to where we're going from the other lessons, what we're showing here is, right, that these people are all waiting in the grave. They have not received the promise yet. We'll get to that at the end of the lesson here. And Samuel and the rest of the prophets. 1 Peter 1 in verse 10, really interesting scripture on the prophets. 1 Peter 1 and verse 10 says, about which salvation the prophets sought out and searched out, prophesying concerning the grace for you. So remember, the prophets did not have the Ruach HaKodesh like we do, embedded in us, but they did have it working with them. And when they needed it, Yahweh inspired them. The Spirit of Yahweh came upon them. And they were searching out the salvation. They were prophesying the things for us in the new covenant. About which salvation the prophets sought out and searched out, prophesying concerning the grace for you. They searched to find out at what time it would be revealed. And the Spirit of the Messiah, which dwelt in them, testifying beforehand of the sufferings of Messiah and the glory that would follow. And this is what makes them first fruits. Not all the prophets, but at least some of the prophets. And everything they were searching for was revealed to them because they did not seek for themselves, but they prophesied the things which concern us, which now has been revealed to you by those having preached the good news to you in the Ruach HaKodesh sent from heaven, which things the cherubs also desire to look into. So even the cherubs don't know some of these things that Yahweh is sharing with us. So, again, Jethro and David and Samuel and the rest of the prophets who through faith, these prophets prophesied in faith and they continued in faith and they went through persecution, some of them even being martyred, but they did it because they understood the plan. They understood the plan and they did it for us. Where would we be without the prophets, right? That's why we know Yeshua is the Messiah. Without the prophets, we wouldn't have that. Verse 33. Who through faith overcame kingdoms, worked out righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouth of lions. Wow. And we see Daniel 6 in verse 20. Daniel 6 in verse 20. And when they came to the den, the lion's den, he cried with a sorrowful voice to Daniel. The king spoke and said to Daniel, O Daniel, servant of the living Eloah, your Eloah, whom you always serve, is he able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My Eloah has sent his messenger, and he has shut the mouth of the lions, and they have not harmed me, because in his sight innocence was found in me. And also before you, O king, I have done no harm. Then the king was exceedingly glad over him, and he commanded to bring up Daniel from the den. And Daniel was brought out of the den, and no harm was found on him, because he trusted in his Eloah. So, wow, what would you do if you were in that situation? You know, think about now, trying to have trust in a situation of whatever, a job, or you know, paying rent, whatever it might be. But think about this, being in that lion's den, where, you know, that's why in Israel, I've had the blessing of many, many, many times taking groups to different places, you know, where they have Beit Shean. I really like that one. It's like a full place there that they have. And where normally they have, you know, where tourists come in and they have these gates and you come and you look. But I always like to take the brethren down inside of the arena. Because to let the people know, you know, we're not tourists. We're not here as tourists. We're in here because we're in the lion's den. In our life, we're part of that lion's den right now. And you got to decide in your life, what is it going to be? Are you going to have fear of those lions? Or are you going to trust in Yahweh to shut the mouth of them? But we are living it. And then, what a lot of people don't realize is the Apostle Paul actually was saved. Also, from the mouth of the lion. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 17. I'll start in verse 16. It says, in my first defense, this is when Paul is before, you know, in Rome, and he's going through these sufferings. He says, in my first defense, no one was beside me, but all deserted me. May it not be held against them. But the Almighty stood with me and gave me power, that through me the preaching might be fulfilled and all the nations might hear. And I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. And commentators, for whatever reason, they say that that's some kind of like riddle. You know, he's saying he was saved out of the mouth. That's what they did in Rome. They brought Christians to be eaten by a lion. And he very clearly says he was saved from that. So apparently that was his punishment. And we don't know the story. We don't have the whole story. But the story was, one way or another, he did not get eaten by the lion. That was his punishment. So he clearly says, I was delivered out of the mouth of the lion. Verse 34 of Hebrews 11. So again, 33. Who through faith overcame kingdoms, worked out righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouth of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the mouth of the sword, acquired power or strength from weakness, became strong in war, made armies of foreigners to yield. So, I think, you know, when we're looking at Daniel in the lion's den, we see Yahweh clearly there. He had faith and Yahweh shut the mouth. And some of these things you could see, you know, quench the power of fire, show an example of that. You know, escape the mouth of the sword, but acquired strength or power from weakness. That's a big one. Because that's one where, like I said, every one of us has a moment of weakness, whatever it is. In our life, you have highs and you have lows in your spiritual life. It's just the way it goes. And it's through our trials that usually we feel low, but through that trial is where you're going to come out the highest. And that's where you have to look for this. You have to look for strength through weakness. At that time, whether it's a sickness, whether you're going through a horrible trial, whether there's something that's really bringing you down that seems like the end of the world, that is where you have to pray for power from weakness or strength through weakness. Because that's what the Apostle Paul said. When I'm weak, I'm strong. You're not going to build faith when everything's going good in your life. You're not going to build faith when you're like Job and, you know, you have a great job and you have money in the bank and all things are going good. That's not faith. That's blessing. And that's great. And you know what? When I'm in that kind of blessing, I'm never going to ask Yahweh for anything different. Because those days are going to end. You're going to have good and bad. So if I have a good day, you know, you can't bring back tomorrow. You can't bring back yesterday, and tomorrow isn't here yet. So if this is a good day, I'm just embracing it. You know, because I know I'm going to get that bad day tomorrow. I don't have to ask for it. But in that bad day, look what it says. Acquire strength through weakness. That's where Yahweh is going to give you that strength. That's where he's going to build your faith. That's where you're going to come out a different person than you were when you went into that trial. And you've got to realize that as you're going through it. You can't, like I said, the victim through victory. You can't play the victim during the trial. You can't think, why is this happening to me? Because most of the time, it has nothing to do with you. Yes, we reap what we sow. And maybe you are acquiring a trial if you did something. You stole your tithe or something else. But most of the time, it's not that. Most of the time, Yahweh is just building us up. That's what it says in Romans 12, right? That every child he loves, he chastises. So it's not a trial, it's a challenge. And he gives us these challenges in our life to build us. Because when you come through that challenge and you're stronger and you have more faith, you know what that means? That means you could do more for him. That means you can help another brother or sister that's going through those kind of trials before. So this, I really love this scripture. It's really good. Let's go into a few of the other things in the scripture. Quench the Power of Fire, Daniel 3, 19 through 28. Daniel 3, and we know that story, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel 3, verse 19. Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury. Maybe I'll even start before that. In verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to return a word to you on this." He's telling them to, you know, bow down and worship this false thing. "If it were so that our Elohim, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, then we will be delivered out of your hand, O king. And if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image which you set up." Wow. Imagine saying that, and they had every right to say it. They're not being out of judicial order. They're not being disrespectful. They're just basically being truthful. And look what happens. And Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, right? His face is turning red. The expression of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and directed to heat the furnace 7 times more than it was usual to heat. And he ordered mighty men of valor in this army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the burning fiery furnace. Then these men were tied up in their coats, their gowns, and their hats, and their clothes, and were thrown into the middle of the burning fiery furnace. Then, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's how hot the fire was, that literally the people throwing them in died. And if you've ever been near fire, been burned, wow, fire is, you know, when you get near a really hot fire, it is nasty. Then these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound in the middle of the burning furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was amazed. He rose up in haste. He spoke now to the royal officials. "Did we not throw three men bound in the midst of the fire?" They replied and said to the king, "True, O king." He answered and said, "Behold, I see 4 men loose, walking in the middle of the fire, and there is no harm among them. And the form of the fourth is like a son of Elohim," right? So here it was, Yeshua was with them. And what does this show us? In the midst of the worst fiery fire you go through, Yeshua is always right there with you. That's why it's always been one of our favorite poems. It's not in the Bible, but it connects it, is Footprints. You know, that this person is saying, "Oh, my whole life I trusted in you, Elohim, and I know you will always stay with me. But during the worst time in my life, I only saw 1 footprint. Where were you during those times?" And what does he say? "During those times, I carried you." You know, what a great poem. And he really does. There's a time where you can't take any more, and he doesn't expect us to. But he carries us through those times. He brings us through just like you. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace. He answered and said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High alone," right? His tune is changing again now as he sees what's happening. "Come out from here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the midst of the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's royal officials assembled, and they saw the fire had no power over the bodies of these men, and the hair of their head was not scorched, nor were their coats changed, nor had the smell of the fire clung. Wow, even talks about that, because if you ever even just do a barbecue, after you do a barbecue, you smell really, really, really bad like fire. Your hair, your clothes, you have to. And over here, not only weren't they burned, not even the smell of that fire, which shows you, right, that when you go through the fire without being burned, you got nothing to worry about. That not even the outsides of it are affecting you. Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, "Blessed be the Eloah of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his messenger and has delivered his servants who trusted him and have changed the king's words and have given their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any Eloh except their own Elohim." Wow. So what a great story. Quenched the power of fire. Escaped the mouths of the sword. Exodus 18, 1 through 4. Exodus 18. And Jethro, the priest of Midian, the father-in-law of Moses, heard all that which Elohim had done for Moses and for his people Israel, that Yahweh had caused Israel to go out from Egypt. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Zipporah, Moses' wife, after Moses had sent her away, and her two sons. One's name was Gershom, for he said, I have become an alien in a foreign land. And one's name was Eleazar, for the Eloah of my father was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. Right? Remember when he wasn't circumcised and he was going to, you know, get the sword, and what happened? The mother, Zipporah, wound up circumcising him and saved him from the sword. Acquired strength and power from weakness, like we talked about with Gideon, right? Became strong in war. Many armies of foreigners to yield, right? And when I think of that, I think of 1 Samuel 17, 51 and 52. Made armies to yield. 1 Samuel 17. And this is when David is killing Goliath. We've been there many times in that valley. It's a great place. I'll start in verse 15. David was stronger than the Philistine with the sling and with the stone, and he struck the Philistine and killed him. And there was no sword in David's hand. And David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword, and he drew it out of the sheath and killed him, and he cut off his head with it. And the Philistines saw that their warrior was dead, and they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah rose up and shouted and pursued the Philistines until you enter the valley, even to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell in the way of Sha'arim. All right, that's the place they just found this. It means double gate. And they found this maybe just 10 or 12 years ago, the town up there, Sha'arim. Even to Gath and to Ekron. So, you know, it's interesting where you think about this. Here it is, right? Goliath is only one guy, the same as David is only one guy. But as Goliath is there, this 9-foot ogre, you know, this wild man, and he's yelling and screaming. These people are scared to death. And nobody's afraid, they're afraid to fight him, and they're scared, right? And they're being taunted by the Philistines. And all it takes is David to kill that one man. He didn't kill their whole army, he killed one guy. And by that, the momentum immediately shifted, that all of Israel goes after them and they're chasing them all the way back. Which shows you in life, you know, one person, right? One faith, what that can do. So think about this. When you're thinking of ministering, you're thinking of out there, and again, yeah, we're only one person, right? And you think, well, who am I? I'm just one person. But look in the Bible, how one person made such a difference. Over and over and over again, you could see one person that made that difference. Quench the power of fire, escape the mouth of swords, acquired power or strength from weakness, became strong in war, made armies of foreigners to yield. Restored to women their sons. 1 Kings 17:17. Restored to women their sons. And it happened after these things that the son of the woman the mistress of the house became sick, and his illness was very severe until he had no breath left to him. And she said to Elisha, "What have I to do with you, O man of Elohim? Have you come to me to cause my iniquity to be remembered and to cause my son to die?" And he said to her, "Give me your son." And he took him out of her bosom and caused him to go up into the upper room where he was staying. And he laid him on his own bed. And he cried to Yahweh and said, "Yahweh, my Elohim, have you also brought evil on the widow with whom I am staying by slaying her son?" And he stretched himself on the child 3 times and called to Yahweh and said, "Oh Yahweh, my Elohim, I pray, let the soul of this boy return to him." And Yahweh listened to the voice of Elijah, and the soul of the boy returned to him, and he lived. And Elijah took the boy and brought him down from the upper room of the house and gave him to his mother. And Elijah said, "See, your son lives." And the mother said to Elijah, "Now I know this, that you are a man of Elohim, and the word of Yahweh that is in your mouth is true." So restored to women their sons. Another story about this, Luke 7. Luke 7 and verse 11. And this is with Yeshua. It happened on the next day. He, Yeshua, went into a city called Nain. And many of his disciples went with him, also a great crowd. It's on the northern side of the Jezreel Valley. And when he approached the gate of the city, he saw a dead man while being escorted, who was the only son of his mother. And his mother was a widow, and a large crowd of sons of the city were with her. And Yeshua saw her and had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not cry." And coming up, he touched the coffin, and those carrying it stood still. And he said, "Young man, I say to you, arise." And the dead one sat up and began to speak. And he gave him to his mother, and fear took hold of all. And they glorified Yahweh, saying, "A great prophet has risen up among us, and Yahweh has visited his people." So, you know, we see Yeshua doing miracles and all different kinds of things, and especially the good news he brings. But these stories are special to see his compassion. You know, that here it is, he's there for a whole different reason, and he just sees this woman crying, and he has such compassion in his heart. He raises the son from the dead, you know, can you imagine? Wasn't just, you know, healing a cold or like Peter's mother-in-law had a fever. You know, he literally raised the boy from the dead because of the compassion that he had on the mother. So restored to women their sons, raised people from the dead. But others were beaten to death, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. So not in every case is that going to be delivered. And some were beaten to death. Acts 7, verse 54. Acts 7, verse 54, with Stephen. And when they had heard these things, they were filled with anger within themselves, and they were gnashing their teeth against him. So this is after he gave that powerful message there to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, right? And the priests there, and then they're angry. And they're literally gnashing their teeth. And being full of the Ruach HaKodesh, looking intently into the heaven, he saw the glory of Elohim and Yeshua standing at the right of Elohim. What a sight that must have been. And he said, "Behold, I see the heavens having been opened, and the Son of Man standing at the right of Elohim." And crying out with a loud voice, they held their ears, and all of them rushed upon him. And they seized him and took him outside the city, and they were stoning him. And those who testify against him laid their garments at the feet of a certain young man who was called Shaul. And they were stoning Stephen while he prayed. And he said, "Our Master Yeshua, receive my spirit." And after he kneeled down, he cried in a loud voice and said, "Our Master, do not cause this sin to stand against them." And having said this, he fell asleep. So, you know, I ask, did Stephen have less faith than Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Did Stephen have less faith than Daniel? No. No. So that's why I say when people tell me, "Oh, no, I know I'll be healed. I have faith I'll be healed." And I say, "I have faith I can be healed. I don't have faith I will be healed because I'm not Yahweh. I don't know his will. Maybe he'll heal me, maybe he's not. I have faith he can." And it takes more faith to believe he can than believe he will. Because if he doesn't, and that's his will, that's where the faith comes in. Where's the faith if he heals you, right? Where's the faith then? So that's the point of it, that Stephen had no less faith than the other ones. He had just as much faith. But in the realm of things, sometimes that faith is used as an example by Yahweh, and sometimes the martyrism is used as an example from Yahweh. The key is the faith is the belief in the resurrection. That's what made all these people stand out, as we're going to see as we get to the next few verses. That's what it's all about. That none of them put more emphasis on anything in their physical life than they did on the resurrection from the dead. They restored their women to their sons, raised people from the dead, but others were beaten to death, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And what is that resurrection? Revelation 20 and verse 4. This is our resurrection. And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was given to them. And the souls of the ones having been beheaded because of the witness of Yeshua and because of the word of Yahweh, who had not worshipped the beast nor its image, and have not received the mark on their forehead or their hand, and they lived and reigned with Messiah 1,000 years. And that's what I'm trying to share with you. This is where you need to get rid of anything that's connected to the mark of the beast system. Anything that's of Satan. And this is the promise. The promise is to be part of that first resurrection. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is the one having part in this first resurrection. The second death has no authority over these, right? The white throne judgment. Why? Because we're already made eternal spirit beings. The second death has no authority over these, but they will be priests of Yahweh and his Messiah, and they will reign with him 1,000 years. And this is where you either believe it or you don't. And if you believe it, nothing else in this physical world is going to make a difference. Because you know what? Whether it's a job that you can lose tomorrow, you know, jobs come and jobs go, you know. Or like I said, whether it's a rent payment that you're not going to think about on your deathbed, you know, that the landlord was kicking you out of a place. Or whether it's a sickness. You know, you come and you're told you have cancer, you have 6 months to live. And you know what? Only Yahweh knows how many days you have to live. You know, it's not, a man can't tell you that. He knows the days, not man. But even if it's something like that, it's that your belief is in this resurrection, and you're not putting anything in your life that could jeopardize that. And in Satan's system, I say this all the time, all of these gadgets that he's put there, all of this AI, all of these things with the internet, they're all there to take you away from that first resurrection, that better resurrection. And that's where the hard decisions come, and that's what these people did. They believed so much in that first resurrection that they were willing to make those hard decisions in their life, even to the point of not accepting deliverance. In some cases, they could have been delivered, and they said, no, no, Yahweh put me here, and I'd rather die for him than live for the world. Verse 36, others received trial of mockings and scourgings, yea, more of bonds and in prison. 2 Corinthians 11, 24 and 25. Second Corinthians 11, 24 and 25. I'll even start in verse 23. This is the Apostle Paul speaking. He says, are they ministers of Messiah? I speak as a fool. I being beyond them, in labors more abundantly, in stripes beyond measure, in prisons much more, in danger of death many times. 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one from the Jews. 3 times I was beaten with rods. I was stoned once. I was shipwrecked 3 times. I have spent a night and a day in the sea in a shipwreck. I've been in travels often, in dangers of rivers, in dangers of robbers, in dangers from my own race, in dangers from Gentiles, in dangers in the city, in dangers in the wilderness, in dangers in the sea, in dangers among false brothers, in hardship and toil and sleepless nights, in hunger and thirst, through much fasting, in cold and nakedness, beside the things outside conspiring against me day by day, I also have the care of all the congregations. So, wow. You know, when you look at this, and others receive trials of mockings and scourgings, yea, more of bonds and in prison. Acts 5 and verse 40. Acts 5 and verse 40. And they obeyed him in calling the apostles, having scourged them, having commanded not to speak on the name of Yeshua, even they set them free. So, and they departed from there, rejoicing that they were worthy because of the name to be despised. Do you do that? Do you rejoice when you get to be despised because of the name of Yeshua? It could be from other Christians. It could be because of your job. It could be for anything. And here it was, you know, it said, oh, they were scourged. Okay. We talked about what a scourging is. We're talking about like Yeshua. We're talking about the cat of nine tails. We're talking about the 13 whips. We're talking about coming across them and hitting every part of their body and blood and guts going everywhere. And they came out of it, you know, maybe with teeth missing and an eye being closed, praising Yahweh, saying, thank you, Yahweh, that I was able to go through this for your name. And people say, does it really matter? Yes, it matters. It matters big time. At this point in time, like I said, the same way, anybody that will tell me that the COVID shot is good to take the COVID shot should go to Nuremberg trials and should be put in prison. In any body that, I don't care if they say Christian, this, whatever they're coming from, sacred name, if they don't understand, if they say the name of Yeshua isn't important, then they can't be a first fruit. Because that's the whole foundation of the restoration ministry, is Yahweh restoring his name. That he's saying it's not by this or this, it's not by a false deity. But in that day, all will know my name is Yahweh. And these people were despised and beaten for that name. And in our life, you know, every time, you know, maybe at work, if you punch your card 5 minutes off when you should, or anything we do that is even remotely, you know, wrong, we're not living up to that name. We're despising his name. Because we're coming in his name, and that's why we have to, our character has got to be there. A good name is better than apples of gold, right? Settings of silver. Acts 16, verse 22 and 23. Acts 16, 22 and 23. It says, and the crowd rose up against them, and tearing off their clothes, the magistrates ordered men to scourge them. And laying on them many stripes, they threw them in prison, charging the jailer to keep them secretly. Again, talking about the Apostle Paul. So, how many times, like Paul says, wow, he went through a lot, you know? He said he had the physical scars in his body that he could show of his faith. And we don't necessarily have to have physical scars on our body, but do we have those scars in our life? You know, are we making those choices in our life that may not be easy, you know, that may cost us some financially or in other ways, maybe relationships, maybe whatever. But are we acquiring those scars in our life by the decisions we're making to put Yahweh and Yeshua first in everything? Because we will get scarred. You will get scarred. Maybe not physically, but maybe. It depends. But scars will come in all different ways. Lost relationships, lost jobs, you know. False accusings, all different kinds of things that it will bring. In Acts 8 and verse 3, Acts 8 and verse 3 says, now Saul persecuted the congregation of Yahweh while he entered homes and dragged away men and women, and he delivered them to prison. So we only, like I said, the Bible is a short history focusing on many of the leaderships and the good news message, but like it says, many of these people went to prison. We know from in the Middle Ages how many of them were put to prison and killed and died because they were not going to compromise their faith. So others received trial of mockings and scourging, yea, more of bonds and of prison. Verse 37, they were stoned, they were tried, they were cut in two. They died by murder of sword. They went about in sheepskins and in goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, and ill-treated. Matthew 23 and verse 29, and the master of this who set the way for us was Yeshua. Matthew 23 and verse 29. Like I said, people have to understand when they join this body, they're joining a persecuted body that has been persecuted and beaten for 2,000 years. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the tombs of the righteous. And you say, if we had been in the day of our fathers, we would have not been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. So you witness to yourself that you are the sons of those who murdered the prophets. And you fill up the measure of your fathers, serpents, offspring of vipers. How shall you escape the judgment of Gehenna? Because of this, behold, I sent to you prophets and wise ones and scribes. And some of them you will kill and crucify, some of them you will scourge in your synagogues, and will persecute from city to city, so that should come on you all the righteous blood poured out from the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Beriah, whom you murdered between the holy place and the altar. Truly, I say to you, all these things will come on this generation. And then he cries over Jerusalem, right? So we see, this is what it's about. You know, it's not about this prosperity gospel and, you know, becoming a believer to get all kinds of money and everything else. That is the furthest thing from the truth of what these false churches are teaching. It is about understanding, about you're coming to a crucified and a beaten body, a humbled body, and that we are to lose ourselves every day. We are to be losing our pride. We are to be losing our selfishness. We are to be losing a covetous spirit, our anger, whatever it is. We're to be losing this every day and be growing in humility and faith to Yahweh by this. And then verse 38, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and in the holes of the earth, right? So like I said, from Genesis to Revelation, from Adam to us, it's always been a wilderness congregation. That's the way it is. Not that every less people were exactly in a wilderness like the Israelites, but they've always been separated. Even when they were a country in Israel, they were told to be separate. So like he says here, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes of the rocks. 1 Kings 18:4. Says, and it happened when Jezebel cut off the prophets of Yahweh that Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and hidden them, 50 men in a cave, and fed them with bread and water. Wow. So, and these caves in Israel are not that big. 50 people in a cave is a lot of people to put in one cave. And especially a lot of the caves have bats and it's actually not so healthy. But that's what he did. He hid them in the cave. 1 Samuel 22:1. Says, and David left there and escaped to the cave of Adullam, and his brothers heard in all his father's house, and they went down to him there. And David was 13 years hiding in caves and running from Saul. 13 years. 1 Samuel 24, a couple pages over, 1 through 3. And it happened when Saul had returned from after the Philistines, they told him, saying, behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. And Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men on the front of the rocks of the wild goats. And on the way he came into the folds of the flock, and there was a cave, and Saul went in to cover his feet, and David and his men were staying in the recesses of the cave. So think about that, you know, why David was so humble. Because for 13 years, you know, Yahweh taught him that through the trial that he went through. And I know sometimes when trials seem to linger, they could be hard, you know, not to take away from that because they really are. But that's where you have to realize, you have to build strength through that trial, and know it will end. Just like Richard Wurmbrand said, one of the things I love that he said in that course was, you don't have to take it all at once, right? Because when you think about that, right, oh, I was beaten yesterday, and I'm beaten today, and I'm going to beat tomorrow, but you don't have to take it all at once. You only have to take it, not even a day at a time, an hour at a time. So when you're going through that trial, don't think about in a week, and in a month, and in a year. Just take it. That's what Yahweh said. Today has enough trials of its own. Don't worry about tomorrow. Because tomorrow can be completely different. You know, the person who's persecuting you could be dead, or you could be dead, or anything could happen. So you just take it that moment at a time, and Yahweh will help us through it. So of whom the world was not worthy, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves, and holes of the earth. The life of a believer is a wilderness journey. That is our destiny. Right? When the kingdom comes, we will be kings and priests, and there will be a palace that we can't imagine. It's going to be made of gold. It's going to be, you know, like the New Jerusalem is 25 miles squared, cubed, actually, not even squared, but cubed. So we can't imagine the kind of palace and house and glory that Yahweh has for us in the future. But right now, to teach us humility, our walk is a wilderness journey. That's what we're doing. So we walk on roads of sand and dirt to get to those golden steps that are going to come later. But we have to believe it. You have to believe. In verse 39, having obtained witness through the faith, these all did not receive the promise, right? Hebrews 11 and verse 13. These all died by way of faith, not receiving the promises, but seeing them afar off and being persuaded and having embraced and confessed that they are strangers and pilgrims on the earth. So whether you go to Abel, or you go to Enoch, or you go to Noah, or you go to Abraham, or Isaac, or Jacob, or Eliyahu, or King David, or the Apostle Paul, and the Apostle Peter, the Apostle Jacob, all these people, all of them, right? Not one has received the promise. So think of how you feel every day. I think how I feel. When I think of that kingdom every day, I want it with all my heart, mind, soul, and strength. I can't wait, and I pray to Yahweh. I pray and I sign, cry, and say, Father, isn't it enough? Please bring your kingdom here. And I just think of that. You know, better is one day in your kingdom than 1,000 days without. And if Yahweh came and Yeshua said to me, I don't know you, and I wasn't going to get in that kingdom, I would just plead with him, just let me have a day, and then throw me in the lake of fire. For all the days I had in this world, just give me one day in your kingdom. That's all I want. That's all I want to see it with my eyes. I want to see those golden steps. I want to see Yeshua there. I want to see every person walking in righteousness. Nobody sitting there in lying tongue. Nobody sitting there trying to hurt another person. Just one day. And that's what each of these people wanted. And when it comes, we will all see it together for the first time. That is so neat. That, like I said, from Abel to Abraham to David to us, we will all see it at the same time. So think of how happy you're going to be that first day in the kingdom. And so will all those other ones. So will Peter and Paul. And they're all going to be together. And Yeshua's going to be right there. And we're all going to get it together. And that's the promise he gave us. Nobody saw it. Abraham did not get so much as an inch of land. But he believed that promise till his death. And that's like I said in the other message, that's why he got that cave in Machpelah. That's why he paid for it, because he didn't want those bones moved. They were given to him for free. But he said, they give it to him for free, they may move it. I want to pay for this because it's not mine, and I believe in this. And those bones are still there today. And if our bones go into that dirt, so be it. So be it. So be it. Because all that matters is the day Yeshua comes, his feet touch that Mount of Olives, and whether you're alive at that time, or you're in the grave, you'll be resurrected up. And like it says, having obtained witness through faith, these did not yet obtain the promise. Yahweh having foreseen something better concerning us, that they should not be perfected without us. We will all be perfected together. Whether you are King David, whether you are Abraham's friend, you know, or Yahweh's friend Abraham, don't make a difference. The equality of the kingdom, that all of us will get that reward at the same time. How beautiful. What an awesome, wonderful, beautiful chapter that just is beyond words in the Bible. Hebrews 9:28, we went over, it's appointed to all men once to die and then the judgment. But we have already passed from judgment. We have already passed from death to life. So where other people are waiting for judgment that are disobeying, we're not waiting for judgment. We're waiting for reward. We're waiting for our reward, and we're waiting for the reward of all those great, wonderful people that are in this chapter. So that is all for tonight. Yahweh bless. Shabbat Shalom.